show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Don't know when this will post. We're recording this on Friday. It's actually the first half of the show we recorded earlier this week with some new commentary on things that have happened. But as far as the Jason Martinez interview from MLB Dev Charts, we had recorded this once. We had called him once. we had done an interview with him once. That was actually the problem, was that the recording part of it was not successful. So here we are again. My co-host, Mike Lingle, who you just heard, he's a little grumpy tonight because apparently KU felt that Friday night was a good night to have a meeting about loss prevention.
It wasn't even KU, it was just random. It's Friday night. I mean, who wants a meeting on Friday?
Not this guy.
We have
a meeting every Friday morning, but it comes with donuts and fruit.
Well, so. Yeah, and that's fine. Morning is fine. Like, it could have been Monday at 6:30. Could have been. I don't care, but not Friday. Man, it's a long week, and the last 2 weeks we've been snowed out. So we were closed a couple of days. This is the first week that I work. Monday through Friday, in 3 weeks. So it's like I just want to be over with it. Anyway,
so how about we talk about some Royals baseball?
Yeah, that's going to improve my mood, isn't it? No, yeah. It probably is, actually. They're playing pretty well.
They lost a game.
They lost a game badly, but...
To Felix Hernandez and Casper Wells, and who was the guy that hit the 2 3-run bombs?
Steven Romero. He hit a grand slam, and then he hit a 3-run homer.
Oh, yeah, and then Casper Wells hit a 3-run homer.
Right. Yeah, the good thing is that none of the guys who gave up more than one run... are guys you expect to make the team. Like, Guillermo Moscoso gave up the grand slam, and...
It was nice of him to let us know that he didn't really want to make the 25.
Right. Yeah, I was like, okay, well, there's one question that's out. Because he hadn't really pitched great in his other appearances either, and he's more of like a, swing starter, long reliever type guy anyway, and the Royals have 17 of those. So
he's just another bullet in the belt.
Yeah, he's just a guy who can probably clear waivers, get to Omaha, and be middle guy in the rotation or something.
Donnie Joseph sitting going, yes, one more guy out of the way.
Right, right. While I was sitting here, I actually struck out twice against Donnie Joseph.
Right.
Both times on sliders, the thing just jumps out at you like it's a monster in a movie or something. Yeah, he's having a good string. Four innings, he's given up one hit, and of the 12 outs he's recorded, 9 of them have been strikeouts.
I think I was kind of with everybody else, and my favorite reliever the last couple of years has been Tiny Tim Collins, simply because he's Tim Collins and he's 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
I'm definitely cheering for Donnie Joseph now. Let's take a quick break here. We didn't talk much, but we're going to come right back with Jason Martinez, and then we'll roll right into that. And when we come back, we'll talk about some other spring training notes. We'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
No love letters, talking to the wall.
you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson, joined by Michael Engel, of course, and on the phone, Jason Martinez from MLB Depth Chart / Baseball Prospectus / ESPN. He's just a busy guy, and it's not even 40-man roster time yet. Jason, how you doing?
Very good, very good. How you guys doing?
Great.
I'm doing pretty well. Mike's kind of meh, but we'll get past that.
That's all right.
Yeah. You recently wrote an article, it's been a couple of weeks now, called Window of Opportunity. We talked a little bit about it on last week's show because after we didn't record with you, we talked about what we were going to talk about and what we had talked about with you and encouraged people to go read the article at ESPN. And the short of the long of this article series is you picked 1 year for the, quote, optimal window for a team to be competitive. Not necessarily the only chance for that team to make the playoffs, but the year that you would see them most likely to make it next. And the optimal window for the Royals was 2015. And along with the Royals in 2015, you had the Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, which is very interesting to most Royals fans, the Atlanta Braves, Mets, Cubs, and Padres. We'll talk about all that here shortly and kind of where some of the different teams fell. We're not going to talk about all of them because that's what there's an once you get to one of the articles, you can just click on the links on the right hand side and you can get the whole series, one article after another. It's a great read. It says why each team should be considered win. So let's get to the meat of it as far as the Royals are concerned. If the Royals' optimal window is 2015, then was the James Shields trade a waste of time? Or how does that play into getting them ready for 2015?
Yeah, definitely not a waste of time. I think, you know, the idea behind this feature was to pick, you know, if we look at the next 5 years, 2013 through 2017, what is the optimal year for each of the 30 teams to have a chance at the World Series? And so when you look at the Royals, I'm a big fan. I mean, I think it's such an interesting team, and they, you know, they have that great farm system, and you see a lot of these young guys coming up. And when you look at the Royals, you know, you want to take the next step, you know, from being a, you know, whatever they won 70 something games this year. It's hard to imagine them, you know, going from 70 something games to 95 wins in the playoffs and this run. I mean, it's possible. It happens a lot, but you know, realistically, you take the next step, and by bringing in a top of the rotation guy like James Shields, you can take that next step. I mean, they were right there in the playoff race, in the hunt, in the AL Central hunt mid-season last year, and they weren't playing very good, but you know, the Tigers weren't running away with it, and so it was just a matter of them not being able to string together quality starts, and you know, the bullpen was lights out, the offense was inconsistent, and they had a lot of guys injured, but they were still right there. It was just, you know, when you have a great bullpen, when some of these young guys that they have, so much talent in that lineup, if they can just continue to get better and progress, and then you combine that with guys that can actually give you six and seven innings and not get knocked out early and not give up five, six runs. I mean, they're going to give your team a chance to win. You're going to be competitive. You're going to have a chance to win 80-plus games. So, you know, for me, the next step for the Royals was, you know, 85 wins and you know, being in that playoff race until late August, until September, and giving that fan base something to be excited about, because I met you over there in Kansas City. Troy, I was there last summer for the first time, and I was amazed at how frustrated this fan base is. And you know, it's been a long time, and so you kind of you trade away your best prospect, and you go, well, whoa, why are we doing that if we're not ready to win the World Series in 2013? But you know. You have to take the next step at some point, even if this isn't going to push you, even into the playoffs, it's going to make you, you know, you, I think the goal for all these teams is to not have that terrible season. You want to be competitive year in and year out. And so you really had a hole in that rotation. So I like how they addressed it this offseason.
Now, you had said you were kind of surprised by the fan base. One thing we talked about on the unrecorded interview was you're from San Diego, so your Padres have never won a championship. They're one of the few teams that has never won a championship, and you were surprised at how downtrodden Royals fans was, because we do have one. The difference between San Diego and KC, of course, is San Diego's been to the playoffs, been competitive since 1985, just hasn't been able to close the deal. And that's going to be a hard road for San Diego with LA and San Francisco in that division. But it's definitely a much harder road, I think, than the Royals have in the Central. And you've got them contending that same time frame, 2015. So we might see some – we might both have a reason to be excited come 2015. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, when I'm looking over the Royals roster and assuming that everybody stays healthy and nobody collapses completely, you know, I think I think the idea of this being the optimal season, that 2015 year, is where you're going to have Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas, you know, mid-20s approaching their peak years. And so they're a big part of it. What kind of contributions do you see from some of the guys who are even younger, guys like Kyle Zimmer coming up and Yordano Ventura and some of those folks who, you know, we assume will be in the starting rotation and maybe their second full year in 2015?
Well, that's a really good point. And Troy mentioned this earlier, you know, when we're talking about 2015 and thinking, well so Shields is not going to be part of this, but you kind of have to assume that they're going to fill that spot, whether they can sign Shields long-term or bring in. I mean, you don't expect these young guys coming up to be at the top. I mean, maybe one of these guys ends up, maybe a Kyle Zimmer ends up being a number two down the road, and he's your guy a couple of years from now. But, you know, you have to assume that they can go out and at least secure one guy who's going to be their guy, if it's James Shields, if it's a Guthrie, maybe Santana bounces back, because you're going to have to start replacing these guys. And so the upper minors is a little bit thinner now, especially now that you traded away, you know, a couple of really good prospects. But you still have Ventura, you have Zimmer, you know, but you have a lot of depth in that rotation too, with a young guy like Danny Duffy, who looked really good last year, and he's coming back probably second half of 2013. Felipe Paulino looked pretty good as well. He's still under team control for a couple of years, so you don't know how that's going to shake out, but you expect at least one or two of these young guys to step in and you know, when you look at a team like, for example, the Yankees, who are going to, I think they're going to struggle this year, and you start losing a couple guys and you can't spend as much money, and all of a sudden you're counting on a young guy like a Michael Pineda or a Manny Banuelos to step into that rotation, and guess what, they're both hurt. And so you just never know, but you kind of have to assume that at least one of these guys is gonna step into the rotation, and you know, they don't all work out, but you have to hope, you know, Zimmer, Ventura, maybe a John Lamb bounces back and helps at some point. So I still think they have a good farm system that's going to produce some guys in the next couple of years. You know, as far as position players, it's probably a couple of years down the line, but you never know what's going to happen.
Well, and the great thing is, it's the pitching that the Royals need first and foremost, and that group of four, as you mentioned all of them except, and then along with Jason Adam, who's a big friend of our program and kind of quietly mixed into that bunch. I think a lot of people in Kansas City know him because he's a Kansas City kid, but I think even though he's like a top 10 guy, and I believe both BP and Baseball America's top prospects list, he's just kind of a guy that's kind of quietly mixed into that bunch, because you do have John Lamb, you have Ventura, and with Danny Duffy coming back and Paulino coming back and some options on him, people have kind of forgotten how deep this pitching is. So hopefully it all works out, and that would definitely play into that 2015 range. You briefly touched on the Yankees and why you think they'll struggle this year, and you're also obviously saying that they're going to struggle this year and next, and the Red Sox. The last time we talked about this, you kind of explained why that was, but I want to actually give you a different spin on this. Obviously, these are assuming that there's no trades made, anything like that. It's just assuming what's in the farm and what's on the team. I was having a conversation with Bill Ivey of I-70 Sports, I-70 Baseball, today at work. We work together, and he mentioned that Matt Adams of the Cardinals is on the trading block because they just re-signed Alan Craig. They have Holiday for a couple more years. They're really strong. They have David Freese, who's another guy that plays into that mix, and there's no place for Matt Adams, so now he's looking at going to the Yankees. What is it that the Yankees and – or that's where he thought he'd end up, is probably with the Yankees. What is it that the Yankees and Red Sox are really missing right now to be competitive teams? Why do you see them being 2 years out?
I think they're very different situations, but you know the Red Sox just kind of had a long way to go, and I think that blockbuster trade with the Dodgers really helps them out. It freed up a ton of salary, so I thought they're in a lot better shape going into this offseason, and they filled a lot of holes. They didn't handcuff themselves with these long term deals like they had before. And I like the Red Sox's farm system better than the Yankees as well, and they have more upper level guys that are almost ready to help out. We could see that with Jackie Bradley Jr. and how close he is after with the spring he's having. He's pretty close, and they have a couple other guys as well. The Yankees, on the other hand, they don't. And, you know, I mentioned Pineda and Banuelos, who would have been there, two young pitchers that should have been in the rotation by now. But, you know, Tommy John surgery and a shoulder surgery, and those guys aren't available. And who else is there? They don't have anybody else to step in. You know, you lose a guy like Mark Teixeira. You lose a Curtis Granderson. And who are you replacing those guys with? I'm replacing him in the projected roster with, you know, Juan Rivera and guys like that, and Dan Johnson. I mean, they don't have depth. They don't have depth, and they didn't have the money to go out and bring in that depth this offseason. And so that's going to hurt them. They could not afford any injuries. And so I don't, you know, they're going to have another offseason next year. They're trying, reportedly trying to get under this $189 million, you know, and under the salary tax threshold. So, you know, it's hard to see them bounce back that quickly. I think the Red Sox are going to make a nice season, but I think ideally, or realistically, 2 years from now, you know, especially with the way that the Rays can go out and compete, and with the Blue Jays, you know, we never know what's going to happen, but they look like they're going to be a very good team, and the Orioles, of course, I just think it's a lot more competitive division. It's not going to be one of those things where they could just bounce right back to the top of the division and deep into the playoffs in 1 year. I think they both are going to need a couple years to get back to where they were.
Well, and you had just a little insight to the articles. You do have the Blue Jays picked to win this year. The Orioles, I believe, are in the mix this year as well and into next. And I'm going to jump over to Mike real quick. Mike, you got something?
Well, yeah, and we're talking about, you know, a lot of these, you know, teams coming up to contention. Another factor that I'm interested in is, you know, the other teams in the Central. You know, right now the White Sox don't have a very deep system. The Tigers have, you know, a couple impact guys. The Twins have a lot of, you know, guys who are still working the way. So how do you, over the next three seasons, you know, where do you see, you know, who's going to be the top threat to the Royals when this optimal year of contention comes up?
I think the Tigers are going to be there because, you know, they're good now. They're built to win now, and they do have a pretty good farm system with a couple of young guys coming up. I mean, of course, they have the money to spend as well to lock these guys up, to bring in other guys. I think, you know, the Indians made a couple good moves this offseason, so we'll see how they progress. They, you know, their farm system is okay. I love the Twins' farm system in the lower minors. So, I think they're a couple years away. They have their pitching staff is pretty thin right now. I think they're going to have a tough time. White Sox, of course, don't have a lot in their farm system, but they have a solid major league team, which is why I kind of have their window, you know, closing, you know, within a year or two. You know, of course, you never know how they're going to reload in the off season, and they've had some trades that have worked out for them. But when you don't have that farm system, it's hard to go out and make good trades. You're always having to replace guys in free agency, and we can see how those, you know, they don't always work out. You know, and sometimes you just burn a bunch of money and you're trying to get rid of salary because this free agent didn't pan out. And ideally, if somebody leaves and you have somebody to step right in. And so the Royals don't have that problem right now because their guys are under team control for the next several years. So, and you know, these guys are going to start becoming more expensive through arbitration, but it's not going to be a ridiculous amount where, you know, they have to go and spend $15 million for a guy probably not worth $15 million a year, but that's what his market value is. So That's why I really like where the Royals are right now.
Well, and I did hear a friend of the program, JJ Piccolo, on the Hot Stove Show on 610 the other night. He made a remark about how the position guys in the system should be ready in 2015 when they have to let some guys go. And I know that just breaks every Royals heart to think about that, because after the end of 2015 is when we're going to be losing guys like Hosmer and Moustakas most likely, and those are guys that this city's loved. I mean, internet's never been as strong as it is now, and because of the internet, because of Twitter, you know, we watched all those guys come up. Those are guys that are close to the heart for the KC fans. So it'll be interesting to see how that reloading happens. You do have the White Sox and Tigers both picked to contend this year. Nobody has their optimal year next year, so 2014 will be a real interesting year for the Central. But again, in 2015, some of the teams I found very interesting is, you know, we might have a KC, a Tampa Bay ALCS, might see Will Myers come back to Kansas City in a super important game, and it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, of course, on the other side, you've got perennial contender, the Braves. The Mets finally get their stuff figured out, and then you have the Cubs and Padres. As I said, you know, Padres are your team, so that's obviously one that you'd love to see. Plus, they haven't made a solid playoff run in a few years. And then, of course, the Cubs, the lovable losers. And I know I know our buddy Greg, he's a Cubs and Royals fan. He'd kill for that World Series. But next year, I guess I better pay attention to the Diamondbacks, because that's their window, and I'll be down there. So I would love to catch some playoff baseball. I never have. And maybe I'll get to do it in Arizona next year. Mike, did you have anything else as far as window of contention is concerned, or window of opportunity?
No, Jason got everything I had in mind.
If you haven't checked it out, please go to MLBDepthCharts.com. Lots of good stuff going on there. They have a baseball podcast, and now they just released their first fantasy podcast, which is fantastic. It's some great guys. Jason was on that one along with I want to say the guy's name's Cliff that does all of your fantasy stuff. Did I get his name right?
Clint Chisholm.
Chisholm, yes.
Yeah, he's done a great job with the fantasy kit, and we're going to have a MLB Depth Chart Insider product during the season, which is going to have a ton of information on Excel. And this guy's great at Excel. Everything is just so easy to go through. He's going to have a bunch of features that are great for fantasy or just any kind of baseball fan, roster geek. We'll have a ton of stuff on there.
Yeah, and they are fantastic. And if there's something if you purchase the MLB draft kit that he was talking about, and there's something you specifically need for your league, you just send an email to Clinton, and he can get back to you and help you out with what you need on that. And then, like you mentioned, there's an insider product coming as well, and check that out because there's a lot of good stuff with that, and you can find all the information about that at the site at MLBDepthCharts.com. I know we asked you this last time, so we'll go over it again. You said, I had asked you the last time, you know, what is the 1st of August like when, or 1st of September like when everybody comes up, and you had said, honestly, it's not as bad as when spring training starts wrapping up and you've got everybody going. But kind of give people an idea of, for somebody that writes a site like yours where you're tracking every single move, which you can follow at MLB Depth Charts on Twitter, and you'll see every move that a team makes, and it's kind of neat because you'll catch a name that you know once in a while or something like that. But what are those days like the first when you have to deal with all those moves and you know they're coming?
It's crazy because, you know, and I have to – every year I forget how busy it was the previous year because I go, oh man, I'm not going to move from this spot all day long. All I'm going to do is update these pages because, you know, a normal day during the season, 15 to 20 roster moves, you know, guys moving from, you know, to the DL, moving off the DL, being option to the minors. But, you know, September 1st through September 4th, you know, there's probably average five guys per team times 30. And so 150 roster moves. So that pretty much wipes out my day just keeping up with that stuff. And a lot of them are pretty insignificant too. But as far as what I do, that's what I have to keep up with that stuff. So yeah, when there's 30 teams times, you know, however many, you know, four or five moves for each team, it ends up being a whole lot of transactions.
Well, follow Jason on Twitter at MLB Depth Charts. Read his stuff at both BP. Go get that $5 BP subscription we always tell you about. He's got some stuff there. And then you can also check out all of his stuff at MLBDepthCharts.com, all the kits and everything. There's a lot of information out there for you baseball geeks like Mike and I. So, Jason, thank you very much. Thank you for not coming on once but twice with us.
No problem at all.
Have a great night.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back on the other side.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We got the interview this time, I'm pretty sure.
It recorded and everything, right?
It looks like it. It says we've been doing this for like 26 minutes, so probably by the time I edit it down, it'll be like 9, but nevertheless. No, it's an interview, so it's actually good stuff. It's when you and I are talking that I have to go through and edit it out. One thing I didn't mention is we've had some great guests lately. Danny Duffy, Bob Dutton, Rex Hudler, J.J. Piccolo, Mike McCartney, Elliot Johnson, not Paul McCartney, showed up last week. He was fantastic. What a great interview he gave us. Anthony Sarantelli last week. Go check all those out at kingsofkaufman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Either place works. And you can check them out at royalspodcast.com, our newest syndicated site. We're over there with our friends from Pine Tar Press, and Dave Lesky's down in Surprise right now. He's the reason they lost their first game. Let me tell you otherwise. And
the reason they got rained out this afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, what a freaking unlucky charm he is.
Like, no wonder the Royals never win. It's all Lesky's fault.
I mean, the guy's only like 7 foot tall.
Right.
So he just kind of brings that kind of tall person doom onto places.
He's like a lightning rod of bad luck.
Okay, the big news, I guess, this week, other than them taking a loss on the spring training, and the Royals are looking good. I do remember I have this thing called Time Hop, and you can find out about it at timehop.com. It's a great little add-on. It tells you what you tweeted and Facebooked a year ago today, and there's always some really good stuff in there, and if you like to reminisce a little bit like I do, I always find something. I actually found an article one time from Nick Scott, where he was applauding general manager Dayton Moore, and he had just said like a day earlier how he hated Dayton Moore and he was never on his side, and I found this article and I'm like, oh really? Here you go.
That's pretty funny.
Don't write stuff on the internet, it lives forever.
Oh well, that's nothing. Like I was looking at my Twitter archive from like 2009, and that was the year the Royals, like in the last 2 weeks of spring training, signed Sidney Ponson. And he ended up starting the home opener. And yeah, I was ticked off. There was a free Hochaver hashtag.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when he actually, I mean, at that point, that was going to be Hochaver's second full season. So, you know.
We need to find a link to that tweet.
The shine was still on the apple for that one. So he was, still seemed like he had something going for him.
You need to print that one off and put it in a frame.
I'm not going to, because, like you said, it lives forever. I'm not going to let people see that. I'm going to ask you to edit that out now.
Right?
Yeah.
Until I go find that actual tweet. And in 2009, I was tweeting about music trivia shows that I was running on JTV, so I hadn't gotten into the Royals Twitter sphere yet. I feel sorry for anybody that followed me in 2011 when I was tweeting 3,000 times in January. I wonder what the hell I was talking about in January.
In January? I don't know.
That'd have been college football. Was that the year that that might have been the year that Nebraska moved?
Probably was, yeah. It was probably that year.
And so I had like 6,000 tweets between January and February. So
that's disgusting.
Yeah, it was a lot. That's why I don't tweet nearly that much anymore. I try to keep it around 1,000.
That's 200 a day.
I had a problem, man. It's not 200. It's 100 a day. It was 3,000, 30 days.
Oh, my bad.
Let's not make it worse than it is.
It's a long week.
Yeah. the other big controversial piece of news this week, and it's definitely – Mike wrote a great article on this out of Kings of Kaufman, and he represented both the negative and positive sides to it. And of course, Scobie hated this idea. And I give Scobie a lot of credit, though, because that man has played baseball. He's played professional baseball.
No, he's played college. He's coached baseball.
I thought he made an independent team, too.
No,
Did he ever play independent baseball?
No. He went into coaching. And training facility.
I knew that he's helped players and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm about to kill my cat, y'all. He has jumped up and down off me 4 times in the last since we've come back from break. And I don't know what he's trying to do, but he's not accomplishing it, whatever it is. Anyways, so this week the big deal was that Ned Yost had to go and volunteer information. Well, I guess we don't really know that either.
I don't know where it came from, and that's part of like why I've tried to be kind of level about it, because he came out and said, Bob Dutton put out a tweet that Yost had said something that he was wanting to get some looks in the outfield between Johnny Giovitella and Chris Getz. And, you know, the thing that I was thinking about was, like, I don't know what context that came up. It's a whole different thing if, you know, you start your media session and everybody's gathered around and the first thing you talk about is how you're going to have these guys go out and try, you know, pick up some time in the outfield. It's a whole other thing if somebody's, you know, just asking about the competition between those two at second and, you know, he just kind of tosses out there that they're kind of looking at other areas for them to, you know, be more versatile. So that context is really important. You know, into that thing. And so that's why I tried not to freak out. I still kind of disagree with the idea behind it, but.
Well, which we haven't even told the people yet. If you haven't read the article, the big deal was that he had mentioned that they're going to give some, not really at bats, but playing time to Gio and Getz in the outfield, which I would have probably freaked out about it, but there was something that kept popping in the back of my mind. When we talked to Elliot Johnson a couple weeks ago, he made the remark that an infielder, especially a shortstop, can play any position. Now, granted, these guys are second basemen, but they're up-the-middle guys. And so he truly believes that any infielder can play the outfield. Well, if that's the case, then you got to see what you have in these two because they're pretty much optioned about the same. You would assume that Getz's option doesn't get used this year if he does indeed become the starter or vice versa. Whichever one makes the team, you'd assume their option doesn't get used, and it could technically be used next year, but that would be screwy. But then again, it's the Royals.
That's the Royals.
So ideally, you would think that they probably, you know, they've got a man crush on Getz. We know this. They want to know what they have in Gio, so they're trying to find a place to play them. Our outfield prospects aren't great. I mean, David Lowe's a pretty good player, but after David Lowe and Gerard Dyson, it gets scary fast in the outfield.
Yeah, there's not much. I mean, that's why they went out and got Andy Chavez and Luis Durango and Xavier Nady and forgetting somebody else.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They just went out and got these guys that they can put in AAA so that if something terrible does happen and they have to have a body in there, they've got options. Because, yeah, everybody else, Jorge Bonifacio and all these other kind of prospects, yeah, you know, Bubba, they're all down there. You know, they're all, you know, A-ball kind of guys. So they're a couple years away, and even then it might be 3, maybe 4 years.
And you know, and Greg Schaum, the latest guest on Pine Tar Press, which you can find at RoyalsPodcast.com, he talked in depth on Twitter. He talked about the move that, you know, Elliot Johnson's has spent time in the outfield, so he's fine out there.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really make sense to do this because how many guys can they really carry? Because they're going to have Miguel Tejada. They're going to have Elliot Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. So then, you know, let's start thinking about what this 25-man roster looks like. You assume those two, and then you assume what, 12 pitchers?
You got your backup catcher. You've got Dyson. So that gives you 9 batters, 4 bench spots, and, yeah, 12 pitchers.
So your 4 bench spots are Elliot Johnson, Miguel Tejada, Dyson, and you're going to tell me that you're going to keep Getz or Gio over another true outfielder or somebody that can – oh, no, are we counting the backup catcher in there or do I need to count them too?
Yeah, yeah. The bench is probably going to be either Brett Hayes or George Koteris
right.
at backup catcher. Elliot Johnson, Miguel Tejada, and then Gerard Dyson.
Yeah, and that's it.
That's your four-man bench. And that's,
so that's where, to me, it doesn't make any sense if you're going to do this. If you're going to do this, don't bother with it in spring training. Go down, make a phone call up
Get them in Arizona for a month in January. You know, get them down there for, you know, spend 2 weeks doing some stuff with them.
Or even if you decide that you're going to do it now, they've got extended spring training. You know, and I mean, leave them down in Arizona for another month. You know, let them play some outfield with the single A guys or the below single A guys. Send him to double A or triple A and let him play in the outfield. I mean, like we've said, there's really nobody in triple A's outfield that matters except for David Lowe for the sake of the Royals. And I mean, we talked in depth last week about the double A is where it's going to be this year. That's the team that you're going to want to watch. Triple A is all the guys that are,
those are your emergency
there.
Guys.
Yeah, the emergency guys or the also-rans that are there in case the wheels fall off. And so, for me, I'm not going to get upset about it because I'm going to believe Elliot Johnson, the pro baseball player, and say, okay, maybe these guys can play the outfield. But at the same time, I'm going to go with the people that say, you know, why are we doing this? Because it doesn't make a lot of sense, and it is questionable. So
The thing that I would rebut on that is that it's fine if it's Elliot Johnson saying that because he's played shortstop. Gio has he's been a second baseman all the time. He hasn't played any shortstop at all as a pro, and he's only played second base. So I think he's got two innings in the outfield in the minors, in the entirety of his minor league career. Getz, you know, last time he played any substantial time at shortstop was in 2008. He was 24 years old. You know, and he played it in college, but playing it in college and playing it in, you know, big league baseball is a totally different thing. I mean, you look at how many times, you know, we talked about this with J.J. Piccolo a little bit, guys like Adalberto Mondesi, and, you know, if he can stick at shortstop. And, yeah, he's a guy they think can stick at shortstop. But you look at Christian Colon, and you look at even guys like Orlando Calixte or Humberto Arteaga, you know, there's not as solid as guys that you think can be everyday shortstops. It's a very difficult position to be consistently good at. And I don't think you can just assume that Gio, who's, you know, every time they don't bring him up, the last 2 years, they've said that they want him to work on his defense at second. Well, if they're going to start messing him around and moving him to different places, does that assume that his defense is improved to the point where they can do this? And if so, what does that mean for the second base battle? You know, I think they have a question at second base, and they need to answer that before they start moving things around, especially when they do have, you know, Elliot Johnson. And if it comes to it, they could always, if they don't keep Miguel Tejada, they could keep Brandon Wood. And he could play the corners, and he's played some outfield. So,
you know what else this could be? And it's so Ned Yost and Royal style, going back to uni kind of moves, is their whole plan is to try to put these guys as you both use, whoever makes the team is going to be a utility guy, and they're going to be in behind Miguel Tejada.
I don't know.
Who's going to play second base.
I think they don't expect Tejada to actually be that good. I think they like him because he's good with the Latin players. But, I mean, you never know. I mean, everybody said, oh, well, Uni's not going to play, you know, that much. And then he started 38 out of 45 games.
I actually came across that tweet from last year the same time.
Yeah.
We were talking about how many at-bats Uni was going to get.
Oh, and the only reason he didn't is because they released him. But, yeah, the other thing is that just putting those guys out there in the outfield, Gio and Getz, assumes that they're going to be okay. And, you know, Getz is not going to hit well enough to be a valuable outfielder of any kind. Gio, you know, so far he still hasn't hit that much. And so that's another problem. You know, if you're going to put them in a corner outfield spot, those guys have to be producers. You know, they have to do something. You know, at least center field, you can be a little light hitting because they usually give you speed and they give you defense and things like that. But if they're just corner guys, if they're offensive production now is pretty weak for second base, it's going to be atrocious for the outfield. I'd rather throw almost anybody else out there. But,
well,
I think it only has to be emergency stuff, and I don't think it's going to be anything that, you know, builds up to anything. But it just seems like weird timing to do it now when we're a month away from opening day. Or not even that. We're, you know,
We're almost there.
Closer to that. I mean, you know, why do this now? It's just, that's the weird thing. Let them focus on second base, figure out who you're going to go with, and then there it is.
Well, and I guess one last thought on this, and then we'll move on. But what do you say to the people that say, well, it worked for Alex Gordon?
Alex Gordon's a freak of nature. Alex Gordon's a guy who played, you know, third base at a very, very high level, minor league player of the year when he left Nebraska, or college player of the year, minor league player of the year, his first year as pro. And you look at him, and he's just ridiculously athletic. I mean, he's a guy who's, you know, you look at him, he looks like an athlete. He looks like a guy who could probably go play football. Looks like a guy who could probably go play some basketball. You look at Getz and Gio, and they don't look the same. So, you know, comparing them to Alex Gordon is just not fair to either Gio or Getz, because it's a hard standard to reach.
If Scobie used to use our show to go running to, if he was running now, he's probably had to stop for a second, let his little heart calm down, and now he can continue on because we're done talking about Alex Gordon. It's so ridiculous. And you guys can, if you guys don't follow Scobie on Twitter, it's Scobes15. You can think I'm being ridiculous, but I am being dead serious.
Not.
This is a man that is...
I can't even share you the emails that we exchange.
Right, and Scobie in his own right is a very good-looking man.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He is extremely physically fit, and he has an absolute man crush on Gordon. And the things he says... You would not think this is a man that is engaged to a beautiful woman, but
no, they're married now with a young one on the way.
Goodness gracious, that he moves quick.
Well,
he truly is out there studding.
There's no truth to the. I don't think there's any truth to the rumor, at least that he was watching Alex Gordon highlights at the time.
He's gonna kill us.
Ah, he'll be fine with it. It might be true too. His wife's a good sport about it. She's probably okay with it. I don't know. Whatever.
She's not okay with being married by Royal Man. That conversation came through, and that was shot down very quickly.
You know what? I get it.
I totally understand. Hosmer was sent. Well, he wasn't sent to. Hosmer was. I don't know if you'd say called up or asked to play on the WBC team for the U.S. The U.S. really doesn't care about winning. The Latin countries do. Canada and the U.S. not so much. But they've brought Hosmer over. I think he was 1-for-5 his first time, and I think they're playing right now if the weather's calmed down in that area. Because are they playing in Arizona too? I think they are, aren't they?
Yeah, they're playing in Arizona. And I think that's a big reason why Hosmer was picked. It's just he's already in Arizona.
He was literally like the place that the Royals were set to play the day that he was called up. They were on the road, quote unquote, on the road. They were 15 minutes away from their home stadium.
Right.
They were at the stadium where Team USA practices. So it made sense. Is there really any takeaways to this other than, I guess if you want to take one thing away from it, it helps out our buddy Anthony Sarantelli, because he should see a few more at-bats now.
Yeah, he's been playing some first base here and there too, but I don't think it does a lot. The part of what went into the decision, just what I can piece together from, you know, guys like John Morosi and Jeff Passan and others, is that, you know, Team USA, I'm looking at their roster right now, and they have one left-handed hitter other than Hosmer, and it's Joe Mauer. And they do have some switch hitters, but for the most part, it's a right-handed lineup. They didn't have anybody else who's had any time at first base, so they had to get a first baseman. So basically your options are first baseman who hits left-handed, who's in Arizona. Your other options are pretty much boiled down to Brandon Belt of the Giants was the other option. So, you know, I went through and looked at every single team to kind of figure out, okay, who else could they have taken if they're looking specifically for Arizona? And so that shuts out guys like Ike Davis and Alan Craig, who I think is kind of hurt. Like, I don't think
he's considered a first baseman by –
Well,
an
I mean, he's a first baseman, but I mean, I think he's got some kind of minor injury that's not going to, you know, keep him out of the season, but that they weren't going to send him. Prince Fielder is in Florida, so, you know, none of those guys would have been – available if that's the idea that they wanted somebody who's already in Arizona. So,
and if they have to fly anywhere, Prince Fielder might bring down the plane. So,
right, exactly. So I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. He's batting ahead of Giancarlo Stanton, which is weird. I don't remember who tweeted it out there, but they mentioned that Hosmer's OPS last year was barely higher than Stanton's slugging percentage, which tells you how good Stanton was and how bad Hosmer was last year.
Stanton's a stud. I don't think there's ever been an argument about that. No, so
he's a beast.
And then I think this will be our last note of the day unless we come up with something else stupid to talk about in the next 10 minutes, but which don't put it past us.
Right.
But Wade Davis, the sky is falling. Wade Davis has a sore shoulder.
Right. Here's what happens. Dave Lesky goes to Arizona. The Royals lose. Hosmer, you know, we don't get to follow Hosmer on the games, on the Royals games. You know, today is rained out in the afternoon game. And then Wade Davis pops up with a sore shoulder.
And kind of tying this all together, Jeff Francoeur's been playing DH. Billy Butler's been playing first because Francoeur's banged up. So maybe, I don't know what Lesky did to the water down there, but he's got them all a mess.
I don't know. He must have went and had a fight with somebody or something. Yeah, I just Wade Davis stuff only came up, you know, it's about 7:30 on Friday. It popped up about, 3:30 today or something like that. So they're going to skip a start. He's still going to be throwing on the side. So it's not like they're shutting him down completely for a time. He's going to still get some of his work in. It's just not going to be in game situations the next time he's scheduled to go.
Today
was Guthrie and Arguelles.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know. I don't have it in my head because they're all messed up around.
Now.
Yeah, and it's split squad games, goofs around with it. But, you know, as long as it's just that one, that's okay. I'm not going to get too worried about it. But at the same time, it's a shoulder. It's the Royals, and they really haven't had that great of success with, you know, injury problems. And a lot of times these little things can turn into bigger things. So, you know, can't say we're out of the woods yet, but, you know, I'm not going to panic yet. We'll see.
Maybe Hochhaver and Chan will both make that starting five.
God.
I hope not. If anything, unless Mendoza throws his arm off in playing for Mexico.
Yeah.
If that guy has a great WBC and then he comes back and continues to have a great spring training, and Jeff Parker, again, on Kings of Kauffman, I'm not just a whore for the site. I read a lot of the articles, and they're really good.
Hey,
especially
okay.
You've added Parker. But Parker actually wrote about how he was all he goes, my article this year that I'm writing this year, I wrote one just the same about this time last year on my site. And last year I was saying, don't start Mendoza. There's no way you can. He's not going to make any sense. And he goes, and I was right. He was awful. And then he went to the bullpen and then injuries happened. And he came back from the bullpen. He was fantastic for the second half of the season. And he rolled through the second half. He's rolled through the Caribbean League. He's in the WBC, we'll see what he does there, and then we'll see what he does in spring training. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, this guy hasn't even had a shot in the race as far as we've been told. You know, yeah, it was Hochhaver, Chen, and Mendoza, but it was really Hochhaver and Chen, and then Mendoza, and way behind him, if an injury happens, Will Smith.
Right.
You know, and I don't think that. I know Mendoza's a good long reliever, but that is entirely unfair to the guy who's been good for this team. And so I'm going to be very interested to see how this all turns out at the end, but
yeah,
we'll have to wait and see.
It's really weird because I was in the same boat with Jeff, and, you know, I think the phrase I used was smoke and mirrors. Because a lot, you know, he had that great year in Omaha, but, you know, if you looked at his numbers, his, you know, strikeouts, walks, and ground balls, things that are usually consistent for a pitcher year to year, you know, they weren't any, you know, he actually gave up less ground balls, and he struck out less, and he walked more in that great year in Omaha than he had in his previous years. So everything I looked at suggested that, yeah, okay, he did well, but he got really lucky in a lot of ways, because usually that, if you give up less grounders, which usually turn into outs, and you're walking more and you're striking out less, that's not a good recipe for any pitcher. And, you know, somehow he succeeded in spite of that. And then, you know, you look at what he did last year, and he did you know, pretty darn good at the end of the year. And yeah, if you line those three and I have to pick one, yeah, I'm going to lean Mendoza because I'm tired of Hochaver, and Bruce Chen offers zero upside at all. Like, you know what you're going to get from Chen. He's going to be, you know, an ERA around 4.8 to 5 or something like that. He's going to give up a bunch of homers. You know, he's not going to strike out a lot. He's not going to walk a lot, but he's not a ground ball guy. He's a fly ball pitcher. So,
well,
you know,
Mike,
just not much to go from.
If you would get out of the basement and use your eyes, you would have seen that he was going to have a good year. I told you that.
Man, I don't have a basement.
This goes back to the whole eye test versus advanced stats thing. It's always such a fun argument.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's not doing anything all that differently. I think he's adjusted his cutter a little bit, and I think I remember he had a different arm angle.
I know this. The league should have caught up with him by the end of the year, and they didn't. And if they do this year, it's yet to be seen.
Yeah,
but he looked good last year, and then he looked good against lesser talent in the Dominican or the Caribbean World Series. And he's going to get to see some pro talent now, but in this WBC. But it's still not, you know, it's definitely not facing, you know, the Tigers. Not yet. So we'll.
Yeah.
Well,
it depends on who he faces. If they end up against the Dominican or Venezuela, they might
or
be better than
the
Tigers.
Puts their best team out there.
Right.
If the U.S. puts their best team out there, then they could be too. Yeah, the Dominicans looked really good.
Well, they
in the WBC game the
other
day.
The Phillies. They beat them like what, 15-1.
Yeah,
man.
It wasn't even pretty. Those guys are not. Those guys are not taking hostages. This is big. This is big deal to those guys. I heard an interview, and I wish I remembered who it was with, but I guess at the last WBC, Fidel Castro promised all the Cubans houses, lifetime pensions, the works if they beat the U.S. and they lost by like 6 runs. I mean, that was a big game for those guys, and they came up short. So if you think the WBC isn't important, it's not important to you. But some of these baseball countries, it's extremely important
yeah,
right now.
Especially,
yeah.
Yeah, the Dominican and Venezuela, where that's what they are. They're baseball factories.
Especially in the U.S., beating the U.S. because they want to keep us in line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of that, it's just spring training. You know, I'm gonna be sad because I get down there the day that it's over, and so I won't get to see any spring unless we head down early, which we might. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I might try to go down to at least get one spring training game at the end. But I'm excited for what we see this year. I don't know, and I was gonna have Jason do one because I know the guys over at Pine Tar are gonna do a prediction show. But have we made official predictions on this show yet, Mike?
I don't think official. I think we've maybe dropped what our thoughts were, but not, like, official predictions, no.
Well, I'll tell you this. Clint Scholes is the most positive out of all of us.
Really?
Yeah, he's got him for 86. And I've got him at 84 plus or minus 4, and I know that's kind of a suck way of doing
cheap.
It. But I'll take 84. I'll take 84, but I can see him getting as high as 88, and I can see him being as bad as 80. Anything other than that range, I'm shocked, either on the good side or the bad side. So that's my range, but I'm taking 84. 84 is what I'm taking, and I think you said you were about 81, right?
I've been 84 shortly after the trade. It was kind of my thinking, and it's kind of wavered. I'm kind of more, you know, I'm leaning 82.
We'll see if Jeff can ever take him for a 500 team again after getting embarrassed last year.
Man, well, last 2 years I think we've had bets about 500.
Yeah, we all picked 81. Even Danny Parkins said they'd be a 500 team.
Yeah, I mean, last year it was Jeff had to pay up because he bet with fake Ned. And then the year before that, it was me and Brian McGannon bet with you that they were if they were hit 500, we would be at opening day in Royal Man costumes.
Well, and then Brian took it a step farther, and he said if they made the playoffs, he'd come as Royal Man. And I have 2 suits now. So if anybody wants to make that bet again,
don't.
We can actually pay it out.
Don't make this bet, people.
Because, yeah.
Don't make this bet.
I'll even let you wear the new one. Either way, there's suits to go around now. So.
You don't want to make this bet. You know what I want to see, though? I want to see Tim Collins wear the Royal Man outfit.
Dude, he would swim in it.
I know. That's why I want to see it. It'd be funny.
Well, and then my pants that I had, I'm a big guy anyways. I you know, I kind of make fat jokes at Pritzfield or whatever. He's a bigger guy. But I'm a big guy, and I know where I'm at. But my those new yellow pants that I had that you might have been able to made grass grow off of because they were so bright, they were too big, and they were elastic on them. Those probably could have fit three of the Royals relievers in, like they did to Broxton's pants a couple years ago.
Like you're just carrying a sack full of relievers.
I mean, they were. I always had to make sure I took a belt to the ballpark because they would have fallen off. They were huge. So
you show with the delivery, Tim Collins, Everett Tiefert, and someone else. Your Donovan Ventura is pretty tiny.
Yeah.
Here's your delivery. Sign here, please. Three pitchers. Thank you.
Three pitchers. Here you go. You've been waiting for.
Here's your invoice and packing list. Thank
Chris
you.
Chris Getz, Johnny Giovitella could also be in there.
Right.
You know, you were talking about the stud that Gordon is and how small Getz is. I remember when you used to be able to get autographs right outside the back door, and I'd go back there and sit when I was first starting the show because I would try to give out cards to the players to get them to call. And gave one to Frenchie, and he said he'd call. He never called. I'm like right. A scorned girl. A scorned woman. He never called me. But Getz used to come out and walk past everybody, and a couple people would go, "Was that guy a player?" And I'd chuckle because I knew who Chris Getz was. Like, but nobody knew. And same happened to Johnny Giovitella a couple of times. People just don't realize that these short little dudes are very well-paid baseball players.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about baseball is, you know, you look at guys in the NBA, you know, originally, you know, you'd have a guy that's 6'4", maybe, and that might be your center, you know, back in the 30s or 20s or whatever. And then, you know, people grew, and, they found the people who were taller, and they went and sought them out and taught them basketball. And, you know, football is kind of the same way. Like, you go with, I think, tackles used to be guys who would be, like, 6'2", 230. And now that guy's a linebacker, sometimes a safety, you know. So they just get bigger and bigger, and baseball players, for the most part, have stayed the same size. You know, the ideal size, a lot of, I mean, if you're going by, if there is an ideal size, it's like, you know, 6 foot, 6'1", 200 pounds. You know, that's a normal sized person. You know, so if they're a little bit smaller, yeah, they don't look like what you assume an athlete's going to look like. Getz is, you know, 5'11", 185 is what he's listed at, so... You know, you could look at that guy and think that he's just kind of, you know, an usher or something.
And there's ushers that are bigger than Chris Getz.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
But, and I did say well-paid, and I'm not referring to in the terms of baseball players well-paid. I'm referring to the terms that Mike and I would love to give up our combined salaries to split what either of those guys make. So.
My goodness, yes.
It would double up the pay for both of us to split one of their salaries and then some.
Oh, and then some. Easily. Yeah. The minimum salary, easily, without question. Yeah. The other thing about Chris Getz, his wife is a 9.5.
Really?
She is.
I guess I've never seen her.
She is hot. So,
I don't know if he's still with her or not, but David Lowe, his girlfriend, when he came on 1510, it was his girlfriend at the time, she was DMing me to get information on it and what have you, and she had DMed me and told me it was a great interview, and I said, hopefully he doesn't forget about us when he comes to Big Leaguer, and now I can't remember what her Twitter handle it was, but she was definitely an 8+, probably a 9+. I mean, Twitter pictures, you can only take so much away from. Jason Adam, 9.5+.
Nicely done, local kid, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely doing all right. My God.
It's like in Moneyball. Those guys aren't lacking in confidence, apparently. So
yes. Good yes. for them. Remember, we don't have any ugly girlfriends on this team.
No, I mean, that's just what it, there it is. It's good for them.
But I think on that note, we're out of baseball. That's why we're talking about the way their girlfriends look.
Right, right. And, you know, I haven't talked to them, and I'm sure they're very accomplished and wonderful young women as well. I don't want to just, you know, glorify the attractiveness.
And, Amy Van Dyke talked about hanging out with a Yankees wife on their show with Rob Dibble last night, and it was pretty funny. There are definitely some ditzy baseball wives out there, but from what I understand, the Royals' wives are pretty pretty good quality. They're not all trophy wives. There's some of them that are actually pretty intelligent. So.
Ooh, I do have some news.
Oh, something happened?
This just popped up. It's not big. But after the rainout today, the Royals optioned Noel Arguelles to AA. So he's going to be leaving big league camp, and he'll be working in the minor league camp. And Sugar Ray Marimon, Ryan Verdugo, and Julio Rodriguez, he's a catcher, they are going to be in minor league camp as well.
I think Verdugo's career with the Royals is over.
Yeah, he hasn't been pitching well. And he didn't pitch well. I mean, Triple A pitched well, but he didn't pitch well in his one start, and he didn't pitch well so far this spring. So
he took all of the KC Baseball Vault curse, man.
Yeah. I think you're right. So. I think you're right.
So, well, at least Jason Adam hasn't yet, and Elliot Johnson bounced back from his injury that he had in spring training, and we got through a game without Anthony Sarantelli getting hurt. So it looks like
he's hitting pretty well too. He's hitting .500 in spring. So
I freaked out Ever Verdugo when I mentioned that. We were about anything to do with an injury with Sarantelli because apparently she knows him pretty well from hanging around with Ryan and stuff. But that's neither here nor there. Let's get out of here, Mike. I got to go walk the dog.
It's Friday. Let's party.
Yep. Get out of your basement. Go get a drink.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be back next week. We don't have a guest right now. We'll figure that out between now and then. I'm sure we'll have somebody. We're still waiting for some calls from Omaha on a few people to do with the Bob Gibson thing, which I didn't mention. If you didn't hear our show last week, there's a big Bob Gibson statue being built. It's like 8 feet tall in Omaha. There is it's the BobGibsonProject.com. Go check it out. You can buy a chair at a table. It's $100 or $1,000 for a table. You can go to the VIP with a meet and greet for $250 a person, but it helps to fund that. They've already sold over 300 tickets, so if you're interested, get on the horn because it looks like they might actually sell that thing out. So, but until next week, for Michael Engel, I'm Troy Olson. Go Royals. Win another 11 or 12 in a row.